And I would encourage you and others, because the education opens so many, many doors, whatever field you're in.
Alaska Native leaders gather in Fairbanks for the start of the 50th AFN convention. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, October 20th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, Palmer High School kids hear Supreme Court arguments.
The septage lagoons themselves were the nuisance, not the farm. The statute itself talks about two different things. It talks about the agricultural facility and the agricultural operation.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaskans and Alaska's communities and in operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
The Alaska Federation of Natives opened its 50th annual convention with a healing ceremony this morning in Fairbanks. Later, Governor Bill Walker addressed the body, saying that it was a painful decision to reduce the amount of this year's permanent fund dividend. He said, "I had to bring the permanent fund into an average and keep that money in the account to grow for future generations," the governor said. A hearing hosted by U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan this afternoon addressed state laws across the country that ban sales of ivory products. Alaska artist Susie Seeluk, a noted carver, said the ban hurts Alaska Native artists.
"This new dilemma we face is unconscionable. Decisions are made by people far removed from our realities, such as the overreach of eliminating all ivory markets worldwide, regardless of differing regional concerns and situations. Our sole economy in some regions of Alaska is set to suffer unnecessary and perhaps unrecoverable damage without any consultation. In the name of saving elephants, we shall never see in our lifetime. By all means, you save the elephants. Just don't punish and conflate us with poachers."
Representative Lyman Hoffman accepted a special award from the University of Alaska Fairbanks Alumni Association for his work on behalf of rural schools, weatherization, and power cost equalization. Hoffman accepted the award just before a panel on Alaska Native education got underway.
"I believe all of these programs and many more came from me through my education at the University of Alaska, developing a working relationship and a trust with my colleagues. And I would encourage you and others, because the education opens so many, many doors, whatever field you're in."
And AFN's 2016 Citizen of the Year Award went to Mike Toyokak. Toyokak and others sued the state of Alaska in 2013 for lack of language assistance for voters with limited proficiency in English. One of the keynote speakers was 33-year-old Megan Alvana Stimphal, who grew up in Nome, then worked for both Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan. Alvana Stimphal's address acknowledged the legacy of gains made by organizations like AFN, while calling for controversial policies to collapse divisions between corporate and community institutions. Those included a request for ANCSA corporations to reconsider allotment of shares to so-called afterborns, as well as ceding state and corporate powers to local governments.
"We must be able to question leadership without fear of losing our campsites, of those managing our lands. We need to pay attention to how corporations organize their voting, because those in power will change the rules to stay in power."
A consistent theme throughout the speech was the need for Alaska Natives to become more directly involved in the state's social and political institutions, schools, village corporations, and especially state government. She recommended the creation of a candidate training center at AFN each year to prepare Alaska Natives to run for state office. U.S. Secretary of the Interior Sally Jewell will address the AFN convention tomorrow. According to a press release, Jewell plans to meet with Alaska Native leaders on a variety of topics, including subsistence fish and wildlife management and opportunities for collaborative management of public lands and resources. Representatives of the AFN and the National Congress of American Indians met on Wednesday to discuss a range of topics, including opioid and heroin addiction in rural Alaska. Alaska State Trooper Sergeant Kevin Blanchette with the Western Alaska Drug Enforcement Unit was among several presenters on the issue. Sergeant Blanchette says prescription painkillers and heroin have become a top priority for the unit.
Right now, the opioid addiction problem is just as prevalent as the alcohol use and abuse problem. And what we're seeing now is a lot of these are overlapping. You know, a lot of people are prescribed these medications. They're not only drinking an excess amount of alcohol every day, they're also taking an excess amount of pain pills. And when you mix these high levels of alcohol and these opiates, you have a very real chance of death or overdose.
Addiction to prescription painkillers often leads to heroin use. Sergeant Blanchette says an especially potent batch of heroin that caused several overdoses and a death in the village of Quinnahock this summer resulted in a village dealer turning himself in.
The people, let's say, in Quinnahock or in Bethel who are maybe low-level dealers, what needs to happen to get the ball rolling on their treatment is sometimes an arrest or to be charged with crimes.
Blanchette says drug interdiction efforts generally focus on opioids coming into Alaska from outside and through hub communities, but he highlights the need for information from village residents to help piece together the drug trafficking puzzle. He also points to a new public outreach effort in villages to educate kids about the dangers of opioids.
If we can get the message to them so they grew up to not be users, and if the medical field can change their practices, maybe we can stop this new generation from becoming addicted to this drug.
Dr. Joshua Sonkis, a medical director at Fairbanks Community Mental Health, says opioids were increasingly prescribed in recent decades as regulations required more aggressive treatment of pain. Sonkis says overprescribing resulted in the current addiction problem. Palmer's Colony High School was the site chosen by the Alaska Supreme Court to hear oral arguments in a case that could test the state's right to farm law. The state's highest court convened Wednesday at the school as part of an outreach program called Supreme Court Live that helps to teach students about Alaska's judicial system. The appeals case involves a Fairbanks dispute between a housing developer and a septage hauler over the smell generated by the septage, which is stored on a 500-acre farm and used as fertilizer. A 1986 state law, the Right to Farm Act, is designed to protect farmers from nuisance lawsuits resulting from encroaching suburban housing developments. Attorney Susan Orlansky argued in favor of the developer.
The Superior Court found that the Right to Farm Act did not provide immunity from the nuisance suit, primarily because, as a matter of fact, the court found that the septage storage was not an agricultural operation as that term is defined in the statute.
A lower Fairbanks court had sided with the developer, and the septage hauler appealed that decision to the Alaska Supreme Court. The high court must define what constitutes a commercial agricultural operation before making a decision in the case. Attorney Bill Satterberg Jr. argued for the septage hauler.
The issue of commercial has never been defined by our legislature. The USDA defines commercial as $1,000 or more of production in a year. So the USDA threshold, the federal threshold, is very, very low.
The justices took the appellant case under advisement. Chief Justice Craig Starr said the Palmer site chosen for the arguments was fitting because growth in the Matanuska-Susitna area has brought subdivisions to farmland, sometimes resulting in conflict. About 300 Matsubaro High School students pressed into Colony High's gym to hear the arguments. The case was live-streamed to Matsu schools. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, South Central skiers look to the skies and hope.
When temperatures are warmer, the air actually can hold a little bit more moisture. So in some cases, you end up with more snow with a little bit warmer temperatures.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
GCI, serving more than 100 Alaska communities. GCI's Alaska Born and Raised campaign celebrates the people who call Alaska home. GCI.com/share your story.
The U.S. Forest Service wrapped up objection hearings Wednesday on a plan that could shape the future of timber in the Tongass National Forest. It was the last chance for the public to register opposition to the plan, which has been nearly 3 years in the making and will go into effect this winter. About 27 groups and organizations testified in opposition, including the state of Alaska. Timber industry reps say the Forest Service plan transitions them too quickly from logging valuable old-growth trees to smaller, young-growth timber. Meanwhile, some environmentalists believe there's too much old growth left on the table. Beth Pendleton of the Forest Service says the plan outlines a new direction for the Tongass, but that doesn't mean it's set in stone. If the changes aren't working out as hoped, the Forest Service will adapt.
So as new information becomes available, because we're moving into a new management regime, for example, around young growth, that we take that information more real time and make adjustments in that management approach.
In all, less than 400 timber industry jobs remain in Southeast. Pendleton has until November 28th to respond to the objectors about what changes the Forest Service will incorporate, if any. The final plan is expected to be completed this December. Stakeholders from around the region are gathering in Skagway on Friday to celebrate the completion of a project that promises to improve internet in the Upper Lynn Canal. KHNS's Abby Collins reports.
Leaders from Haines, Skagway, Clequan, Juneau, and the Yukon are joining Alaska Power and Telephone in Skagway to mark the completion of a project years in the making.
Simply to celebrate not only the accomplishment, but the connectedness of these communities going forward.
Mark McCready is the director of marketing at AP&T.
And really what it means to these communities, as we now have become truly a connected society, it seems, no matter where you live, and it's become such an important and dynamic component to really livability.
The company has completed the installation of an 86-mile fiber optic cable that runs underwater from Juneau to Skagway. It's a multi-million dollar project aimed at improving internet in the region, growing capacity as demand for service increases. They currently use a microwave network. The fiber optic connection is not quite up and running yet. AP&T had estimated that would happen by the middle or end of this month. McCready says crews have been conducting tests and preparing to make service changes.
I would imagine that in the last month or two here in 2016, that in all likelihood we'll start making some adjustments to individual tiers of our service levels and providing more value to the customers.
The celebration in Skagway includes a performance from the Chilkat Dancers of Haines and Clequan, with an introduction from Haines Mayor Jan Hill, and a keynote address from State Senator Dennis Egan. He'll be introduced by Skagway Mayor Mark Schaefer. AP&T's soon-to-be CEO Michael Garrett will also speak at the event. Again, McCready.
We're really excited to be able to bring the folks together that partnered on the project, that will be impacted by the project, to share with them our vision going forward, and have them also be able to share their insights, their hopes, how they feel it will impact their community.
McCready says it's also a chance to look ahead to the future.
Looking at the fact that this region now provides an opportunity for what seems to be a single source going out of Yukon that has struggled with connectivity the last couple of years.
There are no set plans yet for expansion into the Yukon, but AP&T has talked about the possibility. In Alaska, AP&T expects to introduce new internet packages later this year or early next year. Reporting in Haines, I'm Abby Collins.
City of Fairbanks Police Chief Randall Aragon is back on the job. Chief Aragon was reinstated yesterday after nearly a month on administrative leave. The police chief was put on leave after a public accusation that a private security consulting business he operates is a conflict of interest. In a release on Tuesday, Mayor Eberhardt cites numerous reasons for getting Aragon back on the job, including the need for leadership following the shooting of a Fairbanks police officer on Sunday. Eberhardt also says an on-site investigation of Aragon's security business found nothing requiring corrective or disciplinary action. The city continues to pursue an independent investigation of the chief's private security business. The state medical examiner has confirmed that 72-year-old Catholic Father Theodore Kessler died of natural causes before the fire started that destroyed the priest's house in Chifornak. The fire marshal's office says the fire started from candles that were lit in the home. Alaska State Troopers received a call last Wednesday morning saying a house was engulfed in flames and that Kessler, who had been living in St. Mary's before, died in the fire. Efforts to save him were not successful. Chifornak City Administrator Robert Jimmy told reporter Charles Enoch that Kessler lived alone in the house.
Father Ted, I think he was alone.
Does he have family in the village?
No.
And how long has he been staying there?
Not long, maybe half an hour. He was a rotating priest.
Father Kessler served in St. Mary's for 30 years. There will be funeral services for Father Kessler in St. Mary's this weekend. He will then be laid to rest at Mount St. Michael's in a cemetery traditionally used by the Jesuits in the Northeast in Washington State.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Alaska has one of the highest suicide rates in the nation, but together we can change that one life at a time. The statewide Suicide Prevention Council has the resources and training to prevent suicide and support healing for individuals in need. Be the one to ask if someone is thinking about suicide and connect them to help. Visit StopSuicideAlaska.org to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
The Wrangell Assembly passed a zoning ordinance last week that made way for marijuana businesses in Wrangell. Now Wrangell's only proposed pot business, Happy Cannabis, is initiating its applications with the state, beginning the final push for construction to be complete. KSTK's Aaron Bolton visited Wrangell's potential pot shop, has this report.
About 2 years after Alaska voted to legalize marijuana, Happy Cannabis owner Kelsey Martinson is in the final push towards opening day. He hopes to open the retail portion of his business in about 4 months and start growing and manufacturing marijuana into oils within the year.
We just have to go sign some paperwork, but today we're going to initiate all three licenses with the state.
Martinson is applying for three separate licenses, each for a retail shop, cultivation, and extraction into oils. The cost of applying with the state for all three is $14,000. Once the process has begun, the state has 90 days to approve or deny an application, and Martinson has that time to make sure everything's in place.
All the construction, everything placed in, like we said, everything that we submit has to be correct here. So that's why we've kind of spent the last week making sure we get the permit exactly right.
His 520-square-foot retail space has freshly hung sheetrock and bare floors, but Martinson says he's not worried about being done in time. When finished, there'll be three counters forming a large horseshoe with a door blocking access behind the counter. Another door behind the counter leads to the 2,000-square-foot grow area.
We got two separate grow spaces, or two separate locations here. So here we'll have seven bays. So each one of these doorways is a separate room. And then back there we'll have eight separate bays, so 15 total. Each bay is planning right now is to have three cannabis plants in them. And that's what we're submitting to the state right now.
Martinson says he's working with a Fairbanks grower to ship in products until he can harvest his first crop. There's still some uncertainty if that'll happen. The three closest testing facilities in Anchorage and Juneau are still not off the ground. But he says the two Anchorage facilities should be operating in time. Martinson plans to harvest 6 pounds each week, rotating various strains. Each batch is required to be mailed to a testing facility and tracked through the state's metric system.
You have to first input it in the metric system, send it off, let them test it. Then they'll input that test into the metric system saying you're allowed to sell that cannabis. So.
Martinson told KSDK in an earlier interview he estimated his investment to be around $50,000. He says after a lot of uncertainty and bureaucracy, he's excited to see if his business will come to fruition. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Aaron Bolton.
As Election Day approaches, we're checking in with voters around the state, asking what issues matter to them the most and who they're supporting for president. Yesterday, we heard from Julie Tisdale, a Trump supporter in Anchorage. Tonight, we'll hear from Bill Briggs of St. Paul. Briggs is 60. He's lived in St. Paul for 10 years and manages the island's seafood processing plant, and he is definitely not on the Trump train. He spoke with Zoe Sobel of Alaska's Energy Desk.
Bill Briggs shows me into his office that looks out over the machinery of the processing plant.
My little office, I'll get a door one day even.
Briggs is a strong Hillary Clinton supporter. So strong, he even named his personal Wi-Fi network Never Trump.
My name is Bill Briggs. I've been a lifelong liberal Democrat, and I come from a family entirely, 100% composed of hardcore Republicans. For the most part, we don't talk about politics, but I have to say that this year my mother and my sister came up to visit me here on St. Paul, and they both individually took me aside and said, I just want you to know I would never vote for Donald Trump. And it meant something to me.
Briggs has a daughter who he raised as a single parent. I asked what his big concerns are for her future.
Well, I'm absolutely convinced Hillary's going to win by a landslide. So I'm not concerned about Trump winning. I'm more concerned about what he says about us, that there's a significant number of people in this country who are not just angry, but just negative about the country, about the process.
What do you think Trump says about us as a country?
Well, I don't think this will get on the radio, but I think it says there's about 20 to 30% of the people in this country are racist, are misogynist, they're xenophobic, they're not willing to look seriously enough at the problems in the nation and the world to find any kind of real answer or even recognize what the real problem is. They'd rather just blame it on somebody.
You seem to be getting a little worked up. How does that make you feel?
Truthfully, I'm a little bit anxious and a little bit scared about the future because I just don't think people realize that we have to go, we have to move, we have to make some choices to move forward. And especially in things like, you know, making the world a more fair place, that people have food to eat. Yeah, I just think we've got some serious challenges. We can't solve them by building walls. We can't solve them by dropping bombs.
Briggs says he was troubled by the tape that emerged in which Donald Trump was caught making crude comments about women.
I've fired people in this plant for saying things like that, and I've fired people certainly for not grabbing anyone's genitals, but unwanted touching. And I'd do it again right now. Anybody who thinks that's normal in the world today, anybody who thinks that's acceptable, is wrong. And I've had several conversations in the last few days with adult, grown-up men that I've known and asked them, you know, about talking like that. I don't hear that kind of talk. They don't hear that kind of talk. It's not acceptable to me.
Briggs said he thinks this election is probably the most important in his lifetime.
I've read a lot of history. And over and over and over again, civilizations build up. They have some great, beautiful thing going, and then they just destroy it. And I feel like we're at the point of right now, this is the place you get to where you could lose it. I'm not saying we will. I'm not saying the walls are falling down. But this is the place where people make the decisions that in the future cause it to rise or fall.
That was Bill Briggs of St. Paul talking to Zoe Sobel of Alaska's Energy Desk. In the coming days, we'll be speaking with Alaskans around the state about the presidential election. This week, Juneau saw its first snowfall before Fairbanks for the first time in 70 years. Right now, with the exception of the southern Kenai Peninsula and southeast Alaska, the whole state is below normal for snow from Anchorage to Fairbanks to Barrow. That's leaving a lot of Alaskans wondering, is this a sign of what's to come? Brian Bretschneider is a climatologist in Anchorage who closely tracks Alaska climate data and trends. Alaska's Energy Desk is checking in with him regularly as part of the segment Ask a Climatologist. Bretschneider told the Alaska Energy Desk's Rachel Waldholtz that the late snow doesn't tell us much about what's to come, and in fact, you shouldn't believe anyone who tells you they know what kind of snow year it's going to be.
We can paint with broad brushes that we think it's going to be a big snow or a big precipitation winter, or we think it might be a low precipitation winter. But they're really, the shades of gray on that continuum are so large that I'd really be hesitant, and I think most people would, most climate scientists would as well, by saying one way or the other.
So we can't predict snow with any kind of confidence. Can we say anything about temperature?
Well, so globally, we've had month after month after month of record warm temperatures globally. Here in Alaska, we're on track for by far our warmest year on record. So we would expect, if given no other changes in atmospheric conditions, that we would continue with well above normal. Now, we'll throw a little caveat in there, and that is NOAA has reissued their La Nina watch, and that's a global watch. It's not just for Alaska. And typically, when there's a La Nina, temperatures in Alaska trend toward the cooler side. So if that does occur, you know, we might expect some lower temperatures, but that's far from certain.
And if we do have a warm winter, does that tell us anything about the amount of snow we might see?
You know, if you're in a really marginal snow area, say like Juneau or a lot of places in Southeast where, you know, the difference between, you know, 30 and 35 degrees is the difference between snow and rain. Well, here in Anchorage and then much of mainland Alaska, you know, the difference between, say, 25 and 30 degrees isn't a snow rain deciding line. It can be a kind of a more wet snow or a more dry snow. When temperatures are warmer, the air actually can hold a little bit more moisture. So in some cases, you end up with more snow with a little bit warmer temperatures. But that doesn't necessarily play out everywhere.
So Alaskans who are wondering what the winter is going to look like are just going to have to wait and see.
Yeah, I tell everyone who asks me, and a lot of people do ask me, you know, what's the snow going to be like? I won't quite say your guess is as good as mine, but the probabilities one way or the other are so difficult. It's really kind of a fool's errand to state one way or the other.
Brian Bretschneider is a climatologist who lives in Anchorage. He spoke with Rachel Waldholtz from Alaska's Energy Desk. Do you have a climate question for Brian? Email akenergydesk@alaskapublic.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org, or you can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Josh Edge and Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage, Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Abby Collins in Haines, Charles Enoch in Bethel, Aaron Bolton in Wrangell, and Zoe Sobel in Unalaska. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. As an Alaskan, you love your salmon, but do you know the things you can do every day to make sure they're here for your children's children? Well, find out what you can do to ensure healthy runs for future generations of Alaskans at salmonproject.org/20ways. This message is sponsored by the Salmon Project. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.